Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. So we are jumping straight into, well, one of the most provocative ideas in modern biotechnology today.
You're familiar with the concept of the genetic lottery, right? I mean, we inherit what our parents pass down, basically a random mix of their genes. But what if we could take fate out of that equation entirely?
Yeah, that's the big question. We've spent, the last few decades really debating technologies of selection. Things like PGD, where we screen embryos that already exist,
right.
And then technologies of modification, using tools like CRISPR to edit cells that are already there.
Editing the code.
Exactly. But today, we're actually facing the technological possibility of creation. I mean, the ability to design a child's genetic blueprint pretty much from scratch using synthetic DNA.
Wow. That's a huge leap. We're really talking about moving from just tweaking existing code to generating a completely new predetermined genetic sequence for a gamete, an egg, or a sperm. That's precisely it. The scientific possibility is, it's arguably here, or very close. And it immediately throws us into this really intense ethical fog.
Yeah, I can see them.
Because this shift, from randomness to actual design, it challenges our most fundamental assumptions about identity, destiny, responsibility, all of it. When we go from changing the code of someone who would exist anyway to bringing an entirely new individual into existence based on a code we designed, the ethical ground just shifts completely.
And that shift, you're saying it's defined by one particular philosophical challenge?
Primarily, yes. It's called the non-identity problem. And this problem really sits right at the very heart of the morality or the ethics of synthetic gametes.
Okay, the non-identity problem. We're definitely going to need to unpack that.
Mm-hmm.
And this foundational puzzle is exactly what the researchers were focusing on today. Adrian Villalba and Juno Rezenin have really grappled with in their analysis.
Yes, and we really want to celebrate the work of these researchers. They've been funded by Fundacio Victor Grifols, E. Lucas, and also the European Union's Horizon Europe program. Their work has profoundly advanced our understanding of this really challenging ethical landscape around synthetic gametes.
So to really grasp the possibility here, maybe we should start with the tech itself. Synthetic DNA, or cyndDNA, what exactly is that in simple terms?
Right. So cyndDNA refers to DNA sequences that are, artificially designed and chemically synthesized. They're literally built base by base in a lab. You don't need a natural template to copy from.
Okay, built from scratch.
Built from scratch. And this field, it isn't brand new, but the pace of progress is just astounding. If you think back to 2007, Craig Venter's team, they synthesized and transplanted a bacterial genome, relatively small, but still a huge feat then.
I remember that, yeah.
Then by 2016, they'd created a computer-generated genome for mycoplasma. So the ability to synthesize life, or at least its blueprint, has moved incredibly quickly.
Okay, but we're talking bacteria there. A human genome is vastly more complex.
Immensely more complex. And that's the crucial technical point here. Synthesizing a full deployed human genome, that's the 6 billion base pairs you find in most of our cells, that's currently, probably unfeasible. The scale and complexity are just too massive right now.
Right.
But a gamete genome, so an egg or a sperm cell, it's haploid. It only has half the genetic information. About 3 billion base pairs.
Ah, okay. Half the size.
Exactly. And that radical reduction in scale, it transforms the challenge. It moves it from science fiction territory into an engineering problem that's actually becoming manageable. We're basically only trying to build half the instruction manual.
And presumably there's progress in related areas.
Oh, absolutely. Success in engineering fully synthetic chromosomes and even entire haploid genomes has already been demonstrated in similar organisms. Yeast is a key example.
So the proof of principle exists, just not yet at the human scale for gametes.
Pretty much. We're getting there.
So thinking about the history here, we've moved through these distinct phases. First was selection, choosing from what nature gave us.
Like with PGD.
Right. Second was modification, editing what nature provided, like with CRISPR.
Tweaking the existing code.
And now this third phase is creation, the de novo generation, the building from scratch of designer gametes. That really does feel like a paradigm shift in how we relate to heredity.
It absolutely is.
How would it work technically? What's the potential method?
Well, conceptually, it's fairly straightforward, even if the execution is demanding. Step one is constructing that synthetic haploid genome, designing the sequence you want.
Mm.
Okay.
Step two is getting that engineered genome into a suitable cellular environment. Essentially building the synthetic gamete, maybe delivering the genome into an egg cell, or modifying a sperm cell's genetic content so it's ready for fertilization.
And this is what makes it so different from anything else we have now.
Fundamentally different, yes. Current methods, even the really advanced ones like PGD or IVG, in vitro gametogenesis, they still rely on natural processes.
Right.
Selection, or the random shuffling of genes during meiosis. You can screen for things, but you can't actually dictate the final genetic sequence.
You play the hand you're dealt, essentially.
Exactly. CynDNA completely bypasses that randomness. It allows for the deliberate construction of a haploid genome with a known predefined sequence. You're not just managing risk. You're potentially designing the outcome.
Okay, now I see why this lands us squarely in that philosophical puzzle you mentioned earlier. If you can design the gamete, you are, in a very real sense, deciding which individual comes into existence.
Precisely.
So we have to ask, does this act, does it affect a specific identifiable future person? Does it harm or benefit that person?
And that is the absolute crux of the non-identity problem, the NIP. Derek Parfit originally developed this idea. The dilemma pops up whenever a choice determines which specific individual will exist rather than changing the life circumstances of someone who would exist anyway.
Okay, can you give us an analogy maybe to get our heads around that?
Sure. Imagine you've got a car and it has a really faulty engine. If you fix that engine, your action is person affecting, or maybe car affecting in this case. You're benefiting the specific owner of that specific car.
Makes sense.
Now, contrast that. Imagine you're a car designer. You're choosing between two different blueprints for a brand new model. Your choice determines which specific car eventually gets built.
Okay.
Now, whatever flaws the finished car might have, that specific car wouldn't have existed at all if you'd chosen the other blueprint. So you didn't harm that specific car by choosing that blueprint because the alternative wasn't a perfect version of the same car. It was a completely different car that never got made.
Ah, I see. So applying that back to synthetic gametes, gene editing, the modification step, is like fixing the engine. You're potentially helping the specific future person who develops from that edited embryo.
Correct. It's person affecting.
But synthetic gamete production, the creation step, is like choosing the blueprint. It generates an entirely new genetic lineage. The child who results, their very existence depends completely on that intervention. They wouldn't exist otherwise.
Exactly. And because of that, the argument goes, we can't really apply traditional harm-based ethics in the same way. Since the act isn't person affecting, it doesn't harm or benefit a specific identifiable future individual who would have existed anyway. You can't argue that the child born from CynDNA was harmed by being brought into existence with that genome, because the alternative for that child was non-existence.
Okay, that's a mind bender, but it immediately leads to a pretty significant critique, doesn't it? If it doesn't benefit a specific person, some philosophers argue it lacks the strong moral justification that, say, standard IVF or embryo editing might have. Where's the moral pull if no identifiable person is being saved from a disease?
That's a very fair and important challenge. But the authors we're looking at, Villalba and Rosanen, they push back on this. They argue this critique overlooks the importance of what are called impersonal benefits.
Impersonal benefits.
Yes. While the act isn't person-affecting in Parfit's sense, it can still produce a morally better outcome overall. It benefits whoever is born.
Okay, so the focus shifts. It's not about benefiting person X versus person Y, but about the overall moral quality of the outcome, like aiming for a better state of affairs.
Precisely. The idea is we might have a general sort of impersonal duty when making reproductive choices to aim for the birth of a healthier child, if possible. If using synthetic gametes means a child is born free from a devastating genetic disease that the parents had a high risk of passing on, well, the overall moral outcome is arguably superior, even if the child who was born is genetically different from the child who would have been born without the intervention.
Okay, let's pivot from the philosophy to the practical side then. What's the real-world utility here? Is it about designing super babies?
Well, that's the fear, but the authors argue that's not the primary goal or justification.
Huh.
The main utility, at least initially, is likely risk minimization. It allows prospective parents to essentially cherry-pick which of their own genetic variants to include or exclude in the synthetic gamete. This could dramatically reduce the risk of passing on serious, predictable inherited conditions. Think cystic fibrosis, spinal muscular atrophy, thalassemia, especially where both parents are carriers.
So you could deliberately construct a gamete that doesn't carry the disease variant from that parent.
Exactly. And the power becomes even clearer if both partners use synthetic gametes. they could coordinate their choices.
Ah, so they could ensure the resulting embryo doesn't inherit two copies of a recessive disease gene.
Precisely. They could actively avoid that double inheritance, effectively eliminating the risk for that specific condition in their child.
That sounds incredibly powerful for families facing those risks.
It is. And this kind of collaborative, low-risk approach, it's framed as being grounded in responsible reproductive autonomy. It enhances the potential to reduce suffering without necessarily venturing into enhancing traits or trying to create quote-unquote perfect individuals.
But the moment you say designing a genome, even for medical reasons, the alarm bells for eugenics start ringing. It's such a loaded term with a terrible history. How do the authors address that?
Yeah, that's a vital point. They make a very sharp distinction. Historical eugenics, the kind we rightly condemn, was characterized by coercion. Usually state or societal pressure, policing who could reproduce, often based on deeply flawed, racist, or classist ideas of fitness.
Mm-hmm.
It was fundamentally about restricting autonomy.
Okay, so coercion versus choice.
That's the key distinction they draw. The use of synthetic gametes, as discussed here, is envisioned as being grounded entirely in individual reproductive liberty. It's a tool available to prospective parents who choose to use it. The absence of coercion is ethically crucial.
So the argument is, if the intention is to avoid predictable, serious suffering and it's freely chosen, it's different from historical eugenics.
That's the core argument, yes. Provided the goal remains relatively modest, avoiding known severe heritable diseases.
But couldn't there be societal pressure, even without direct state coercion, if this becomes common for avoiding diseases? Could it create a kind of soft eugenics where people feel obligated to use it? Or not using it becomes seen as irresponsible?
That is absolutely the critical follow-up question and a valid concern. The authors acknowledge this possibility, but argue that intention still matters significantly. If the aim is genuinely avoiding serious disease, they see it as medically justified, an extension of what we already try to do with PGD and genetic screening. They differentiate this strongly from designing cosmetic traits or enhancements, which would raise much stronger, perhaps insurmountable, eugenics concerns.
So the line they draw is between preventing severe illness and pursuing enhancement.
Essentially, yes. The goal, they argue, should be increasing the chance of a child living a life unburdened by severe inherited illness, which aligns with existing moral aims in reproductive medicine.
Okay, so connecting this back to the big picture, this ability to potentially design a genome, not just select an embryo, it really forces us to reevaluate things. The moral debate shifts away from strictly person-affecting harm, who did we hurt, towards these broader, maybe fuzzier, impersonal considerations of overall well-being, and where the limits of parental design choices should lie. It feels like the ultimate expression of reproductive autonomy, but also potentially the most ethically fraught.
That sums it up well. To really crystallize the central insight, synthetic gametes represent a fundamental change, ethically speaking. They shift the moral landscape away from selecting among existing genomic combinations towards the deliberate de novo creation of life with known, predefined genetic characteristics.
And this technology, while raising deep questions, clearly offers potentially powerful, maybe even transformative opportunities, especially for preventing heritable diseases and expanding reproductive choices for parents facing high genetic risks.
Which brings us to the really important question for you, the listener, to think about. What does this ultimate shift, this move from selecting an embryo to potentially designing a genome from scratch, what does it really mean for how we balance that fundamental human right to reproductive autonomy with the moral desire, maybe even the imperative, to minimize heritable disease and suffering in the generations to come? Where do we draw the lines?
That's definitely something to mull over. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.